And welcome back, and this is the last hour of the Tara Show. Definitely happy that we had time to spend together, and it's been since New Year's Day that I've filled in on this radio station. And if you wanted to find me, every once in a while, you catch me through the late night hours when I get to do Coast to Coast AM. And I have a couple of coming up this weekend, Saturday night and Sunday night, so we'll get to spend some more time. Look at that. You get me three times this week. So if you're looking to message the show, one of the best ways you can do it, just use the Common Sense Retirement Planning text line at 800-905-0989. There's a lot that I want to get to. We do have one more interview this hour. Aaron Perlett is going to join us. He's the author of The Death of Compromise. And I've known Aaron for a long time. When I lived in St. Louis, we used to talk, and he represented some tech companies. He represented the auto dealers during the auto show, things like that. So I've known Eric for a while. And when I saw that he has a book out, I said, this is a great opportunity. We'll get to reconnect. So I'm looking forward to that. It is Memorial Day. And later in the hour, too, I do want to play Ray Charles one more time because I think that is perhaps one of the best patriotic songs ever recorded. And Ray Charles just beautiful. And then I think about The Sandlot, and that's how my son was introduced to the song. If you remember, during The Sandlot, they played the Ray Charles song during the 4th of July, and the fireworks are going off, and they're grabbing the hot dogs real quick so they can play baseball under the fireworks. And they orchestrated just the perfect atmosphere for them to talk about what summer vacation was all about and in America. And I always thought that was great, and it was a way to bring the conversation to my son. And, you talk about things like Memorial Day. And what does it mean, the ultimate sacrifice? They gave their lives for this country, and we think about all the things that we're able to do and enjoy, and then some people actually take the step further, and they say, I defend it with my life. I'll step forward, and I believe in this so much that I would defend it with my life. And some people make the ultimate sacrifice. And how do you talk to children about that? So I asked my daughter, I said, do you know what Memorial Day is? And I said, let's record this. This was just last night. I was getting ready for the show this morning, and I wanted to know what my daughter knew about a day like this. And I thought, maybe we can do that here on the air. So in context, she's in kindergarten. She's 5 years old. We talked about Memorial Day.
How are you doing today?
I am doing good today. Today is Memorial Day. Do you know what Memorial Day is?
No.
So Memorial Day is a day that we, in reverence, which means with a lot of great respect, look back at all the people that lost their lives fighting for this country and fighting for our freedoms and fighting for all the things that we love. There are some people that want to take those things away from us in life. And there are people that want to defend our freedoms. And those people sometimes die doing it.
Oh no.
So we have a day called Memorial Day where we honor those people who lost their life honoring and serving this country and the people in it. What do you think about the people that protect our country? What do you think about the people that help protect the things we love?
I hope they're okay, and I hope they have each other and never lose each other.
Well, they're there with each other. There's a band of brothers where they go in and they're very close with the people that they serve in. But sometimes people serve and they die while they're serving, so they lose their life.
Oh,
and
no.
It's really sad. And it's also sad because they have family members and friends here that miss them a lot. And they are very scared when they go away and they fight for the country. And then they know there's a chance they don't come back, and sometimes they don't.
Oh, no!
So every year, we have one day that we call Memorial Day, so we make sure we honor their sacrifice. Isn't that nice?
Yes.
What would you like to say to the military men and women that are protecting this country, that are help serving?
Thank you so much for helping us.
Isn't that nice?
Yes.
They're prepared to lose their life protecting this country. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
What do you think people should do on a Memorial Day in order to remember those that lost their lives?
Maybe they should draw a picture of them.
That's really
or
cool.
They could, Or they could just think about them and think about all the things they like and write them down.
That's great. The things that they liked. And I'm sure there's a lot of family members that have lost a loved one, and they can write those things down. And it might make them sad, but also happy at the same time.
Yeah, like happy tears come out.
Yeah, like happy tears come out on a Memorial Day. And there's been a lot of people that have lost their lives. And I look at it, and it's the heroes that love their country so much and fought for it. It's really amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, thank you very much. And I know that at the age of 5, you might have a hard time understanding some of this, but I think you get a pretty good idea. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Aww. Isn't that something? That was my daughter. We recorded that last night, and I told her, I'm going to play that on the radio show, and she was so excited. With that, and we got this. I think the very first text message that came into the show earlier was Happy Memorial Day. And I just wanted to mention this again. When you talk about the reverence that goes with the Memorial Day and the meaning behind it, sometimes people say happy, and this is what I would say. Don't jump on that person's back if someone says that. Just don't make a big deal of it, mostly because you know the intention behind it. You know their heart when they say things like that. It's not meant to diminish the sacrifice that was made. It's that sometimes we get on someone and we try to torch them for little things when you know what they meant, right? You don't have to try to give them a hard time. So just a quick note, if you can do something for me today, not that you have to, but if you ever hear someone say that, just cut them a little slack, all right? I don't know anyone that directly died in the line of service, because I think about the people I knew from high school that joined the military, and I know some that were I was close to that joined the military. They served in Iraq or, you know, sometimes Afghanistan after, but they all came back. It's a little bit different for them, and some of them went in with the mindset, and they were out with the same mindset. They knew what they were getting into. It's something they always wanted to do. Some came back different and changed. They went in, and what happened to them, they came back a much more serious person. So there was some differences there. But nonetheless, they all came back. So I don't know anyone that lost their lives that way. My grandpa served World War II. My dad served in Vietnam. And they all come back with something different. If they come back with their lives, some of them come back with ailments, injuries, some of them with PTSD, memories. Some of them may have loss of hearing. Some of them could have, you know, a limp. But they all have something that they bring back with them. And it's a different meaning for them. So if you served in the military and you're listening here today, I know that it's not really meant to thank you for your service type of day, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I know what you're dealing with and what you're going through, and you're probably thinking about the people that you knew serving that never made it back to. It is Memorial Day, and if you want to message the show, feel free to use the Common Sense Retirement Planning text line at 800-905-0989. What is the very latest when it comes to Iran? We'll get to that coming up. And guest Aaron Perlett is going to join us after the probably like 20 minutes from now. The Death of Compromise is his book. Looking forward to discussing that with him. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara on WORD. We got a couple of minutes here, and we'll have a guest talking about, I guess, political compromise in a way. It's kind of interesting thought. Aaron Perlett in The Death of Compromise. It's so fascinating with it, and I think we look at the world events in different ways. But I find the idea of a book about compromise and the history of it in some ways very fascinating. So I look forward to talking to Aaron coming up after the break. Got about, you know, 15 minutes from now. A few things to get to, and I wanted to find what the very latest was when it came to Iran and the U.S. And here's the latest from CBS News. Potential deal includes 60-day ceasefire extension, halt of fighting on all fronts, including Lebanon, according to sources to CBS, pending Iran's approval. Part of this side, too, is that Iran has come out and said, yeah, it's progressing, but it's nowhere near as complete as Donald Trump leads you to believe. Donald Trump making it sound like it's within his arm's reach. I'm not going to take Iran's word for it. Let me put it that way. I think that in a lot of ways, Donald Trump may be ambitious when he says, okay, we got to get this done. And we know we want to get it done sooner than later. So we're not going to bend on the nukes. We're not going to let you enrich. You're going to have to turn everything over because we can't trust that you're going to not lie to us like you've done every other time. So there's a few things I'm sure they're trying to figure out here. So maybe Donald Trump feels like, okay, since we've made progress, it's closer than we've been in the past. So that's where it's at. That could be a part of it, maybe. So that's where it's at. And it is a Memorial Day, so I don't know how much is going to be happening news-wise, but we'll keep an eye on it for there. One person said, the text message is coming in here. Memorial Day, all gave some gave all. Thank you for that. One person said, thank you for airing the clip with your five-year-old daughter. Explained Memorial Day. It was precious. Prayers and thoughts for all that have served in the military in our country. That's from AJ. Thank you for that, too. And it's so, just to kind of break the fourth wall here, radio on a holiday like this, normally people are sleeping in, they're not in the car, thus listenership is a lot lower than normal when they're not driving around. I know there's Memorial Day is a little bit different. It's a heavy traffic day, but people aren't normally hitting the road this early. They will here soon, and by tonight you'll get some very cramped roadways. So the fact that there's anyone up listening this early, I really do appreciate. I know it's 9:23 in the morning. It's not that early, I should say that. We are live here in South Carolina, but just giving you the very latest of what's going on around. There's a few things that happen over the weekend, too. And when you have the news shows on Sunday, they like to talk to the newsmakers. You saw that Thomas Massie out of Kentucky, he was primaried, and they went in a different direction. They said no more. So they brought him on, and he's kind of giving his, you know, last thoughts in a way. You know, he knows that it's only a matter of time now that he's out of office. And it's Thomas Massie's an interesting guy because on the surface, you can look at him and say he's fighting some really good things. Like, he is fighting the good fight. He is, there's things that he wants, and all of those things line up with the things I want. Very good. And then there's the other side of it, which is he's the turd in a punch bowl type of thing for the party. Doesn't know how to get along with other people. Probably not the best phrase to use on a Monday morning, but you know what I mean. He has a hard time getting things done because he is that hard to work with. So how do you deal with a guy like that? So when push comes to shove and they say you can accomplish all the things that you want while in office, but you can't be the jerk, because if you go out there and you're trying to pick fights with Donald Trump, regardless of what goes on, you're going to have a hard time because you're not going to get anything that you want done. So what's going to happen next with Thomas Massie? His voting record definitely aligns with the things that I would want him to vote on. Is there a future for him? He was on NBC yesterday, and this is his autopsy of his basic time in office.
Congressman Massie, was it all worth it?
It was absolutely worth it for me. Now, I don't think it's going to be worth it for the party. Look, the left, some people on the left have Trump derangement syndrome. They call it TDS. But there's a growing number of people on the right who have a form of TDS called Trump disappointment syndrome. And I think what's going to happen to the party this fall is they've disenfranchised a large portion of that constituency that Trump assembled to get us in the White House, in the Senate majority, and in the House majority. They've alienated MAHA by kowtowing to the pesticide manufacturers and the pharmaceutical manufacturers. They've alienated the fiscal hawks by running DOGE out of town. They've alienated the people who don't want to fight another war for other countries. And so I'm worried that in November, this is going to cost the party a lot. But for me, it was completely worth it.
Okay. Is it going to cost the party a lot? One, I don't think he's ever been worried about the party, so don't give me this. Whenever a politician like this goes on, it feels like they had the scripted questions ahead of time as a precursor. I don't feel like this was unscripted. I feel like he had a very calculated answer he was going to give. So take that for what it's worth. I may be wrong, but it just felt that way. Number two, are you truly worried about the party? No, I don't think he is actually worried about the party. Three, is he right about what he's saying here? Some on the left have Trump derangement syndrome. Well, some on the right have their own version of it where he can do no wrong. I get that too. But some of the things that he's pointing out, not starting a war, this thing with Iran is enough for you to, dig in deep with what's going on in Iran. I find that if it's true that the intelligence showed that they were going to be using the weapons that they have and they were going to use it against either our allies or ourselves, then us neutralizing those was the right and necessary move. We knew that they were going to continue on this path. Nothing was going to stop them. Was it necessary we just go in and do it unilaterally without, going to Congress? You can question all of these different things. I get it. But to say this is the thing, the hill you're going to die on, is a stupid hill to die on, honestly. And I don't like that we're there. I don't like what we're dealing with right now. But to say it is totally unnecessary and to think that we really have no business doing any of this, I disagree with that. I'd say it definitely is part of our business right now. I get it. And you could be frustrated, but to say I'm going to start a war with Donald Trump over this one thing, as opposed to just saying, listen, I wish this would have played out different. I wish we could have done something differently. To take such a hardline stance on it is the reason you are where you are right now. So he makes it sound like, okay, he's always been like this. I get it. Here's another thing. They were asking him about some of the other things he's been trying to do, like the Epstein list.
As you've noted, the speech and debate clause actually protects you from being prosecuted for whatever you say on the floor of the House. You have named names in the Epstein files in the past. Can we expect you to name more names in the coming weeks and months?
Yes. Todd Blanche is violating the law. There's still millions of files they haven't released. We know from talking to the victims' lawyers that their own 302 forms haven't been released. We know the files have been over-redacted. I have released at least three names of billionaires who are implicated in this. I don't think it's possible to get to convictions with Todd Blanche at the top and with the FBI director, Kash Patel, at the top, because they've effectively both perjured themselves by saying that there's nobody else in the file. Even Melania doesn't believe that. The First Lady knows that Jeffrey Epstein didn't act alone. And here's the great thing, Kristen. Whether I'm in Congress or not, the Epstein Files Transparency Act is a law, and it goes on for years. So if we can't get this attorney general and this FBI director to do the right thing, the next ones who take those seats are obligated by law to release the files.
Yeah. So he's hoping that the torch is carried on. In some ways, I think that's not going away. A lot of times, the Epstein stuff, people do want the Epstein, and I am one of them. I would like to see all of this resolved, and to say that the government's given us everything that there is to give, I don't believe that either. So I get it. I get it. It's noble.
As you've noted, the speech and debate clause actually...
Sorry about that. I pressed the wrong button. We just played that clip. But it's noble. Let me put it that way. It is a noble thing, but you died on the hill. And now you'll have nothing to show for it other than you're a bitter guy that hates Donald Trump. So did it have to end this way? No, it absolutely did not have to end this way. All right, we're trying to reach our guest, Aaron Perlett. We hope to connect with him soon on WORD. Don't go anywhere. Hey, welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara. Thank you for all the text messages that are coming in here. I'll try to read some of these as we connect with our guest, Aaron Perlett. One said, let's see, Ryan, Massey has already gone on the House floor and falsely accused men in the Epstein files that were used in a police lineup. One was a mechanic. Funny how Massey does not call out liberal Judge Rosenberg who blocked the Epstein victims' court testimony naming their abusers. Thank you for that text message. Yeah, no one's perfect with those things. I get it, but you're right. He's read some names, and man, that would be a terrible thing to get wrong if you try to out someone to be on an Epstein file and you weren't. That's pretty bad because you don't want to be labeled. It's one of the things you do not want to be labeled with. All right. I think we may have it. Do we have our guest? Joining us now is the author of The Death of Compromise, Aaron Perlett. Thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We go back some years, which is very cool when I saw your name pop up. And I thought, oh, this is great. He's got a book out now, The Death of Compromise. And you gave me a preview copy. I was going through it. It was kind of interesting because I thought there's a lot of things in here that we disagree on in some ways. And it's kind of interesting, too, because the whole idea of compromise and some of the arguments that you bring up in the book, there's a lot of contradictions because everything's more complex than we give it credit for.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think the problem is that, you know, we have gotten to the point where, to me, compromise is the politics of the adult. And instead, we've decided to reward tantrums. And, you know, in today's outrage economy, compromise is seen as kind of a moral failure or capitulation. But in reality, it's kind of the art of designing this coexistence in a diverse society. And sometimes it requires courage to disappoint your own tribe. And that's what we've done. We've broken up into these tribes of extremes on the left and the right. And it has really polarized our country. It's polarized our communities that we live in. And it's problematic. And so in writing the book, I really wanted to understand. I didn't really go into it with any kind of opinions. I just wanted to understand, how have we gotten here? And so it's more of an historical analysis than anything else, tracing back around 60, 70 years. Although, I mean, it looks back to the birth of our republic with the framers and what their intentions were. But yeah, it was interesting to trace back in history and understand how we've gotten to where we are.
Yeah, and I feel a lot of ways when we talk about compromise, you would say, yes, that's just how things work. If you have two different ways of looking at it, then you find ways to make it work so you both get what you want out of it, at least some of the core principles of it. And in recent years, here's what I think happens sometimes, where they may not be happy because they don't get as much as they want out of it, so it's an all-or-nothing deal, as in, you know, it's not worth it unless we get all this, so we're just going to have to plow through this, put our head down, and kind of like Earl Campbell in the NFL, you just got to go through the line and just hope you can make it through, because power is the only way you're going to be able to get it. So you got to get as much power as you can to get what you want, because otherwise, if you go the compromise route, you're going to lose more than you're willing to lose, and it's not going to be worth it for you. So you got to go all in. And it feels like that's kind of where we are in politics today.
Without question. And I think that you have to think of it like a marriage. In a successful marriage, you compromise because you care more about the relationship than being right. And in politics, we've lost that. We love victory more than we love the republic. No matter what we tell each other, you know, we could say, "Oh no, I love America," but our behaviors do not echo that. Our behaviors echo the reality that power, to your point, Ryan, is what we're more interested in. And I think where we've really seen it most concerningly to me is with the violence that has begun to spread just dramatically, particularly in the last 15 years across America. And that's when I started writing this book, was when Charlie Kirk was murdered. And that was my son's 21st birthday, and I'm thinking about him, and you know, like any parent does, and you know, we're kind of reminiscing of the trajectory of his life, and then the news breaks that Charlie Kirk has been killed, and I, you know, to be honest, and I try to be very transparent in the book about my feelings on things, because I think it's important to understand who's presenting these historical facts. But I didn't really believe in the mantra of that Charlie Kirk was sharing. But that's okay, because to me, he was actually doing what he wanted to do, and he was doing it the right way. I mean, he was going across the country trying to shape hearts and minds, and he was participating in open debate with people who maybe some disagreed with him and maybe some agreed with him. And for that, he gets shot in the throat. And that had come right on the heels of two Minnesota legislators that had been shot, and one of them killed along with her husband in Minnesota. And so it's like this snowball that just keeps going downhill and gathering steam. And it's very, very concerning.
Yeah. It was something else that's interesting in your book, The Death of Compromise. By the way, if people wanted to look it up, where can they go?
You can buy it on Amazon, or you can just go to deathofcompromise.com and you can read about the book itself and decide for yourself. There's a couple video clips there of me discussing the book. And I also think it's really important to know that this book isn't trying to change people's politics. It's the last thing I would ever want to do. You know, if you're a liberal and you want to believe in liberal values, please do. If you're a conservative and you believe in conservative values, please do. It's more about the vilification of those who have different views than us. And I'm not trying to change hearts and minds, but I'm hoping that people will, you know, we model our behaviors, and I'm hoping that for others, especially young people, and I'm hoping that by thinking about and looking at history, that maybe we'll understand how much damage we're doing to our republic.
You know, it's kind of interesting, too, as part of the book. And I was going through it, and I was taking some notes down. And you get to a point where you allude to faith, and then you get to a section of it where you recognize that you really don't have a strong faith background or belief like, you know, a lot of other people do. They have different right. viewpoints, deeply held religious beliefs do shape the way they look at the world. And, you know, I think about myself. I'm a Christian, and I know there's other worldviews if you're Muslim, but you have these certain deeply held beliefs, and there's zero chance you're going to compromise on those things. So you kind of talk a little bit about that and how you come at it in a way where you don't hold those beliefs. So you look at it and you almost in wonder, like, okay, now I got to try to understand where they're coming from because I don't come from that sort of thing. What was that like writing and trying to, I guess, dive into a section that you know you don't have a deep understanding of?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And quite frankly, in all the conversations I've had about this book, the first time I've been asked that about my own personal beliefs as it relates to that. What I tried to do was talk to people of faith for this book. So, you know, one of the people was Senator John Danforth, a former Republican from the state of Missouri, as well as a Presbyterian minister from Ferguson, Missouri. Senator Danforth said something really interesting to me. In that, and it's in the book, he talks about how basically he believes that religious leadership has failed Americans, in that, you know, they've allowed their biblical beliefs, their religious beliefs to shade their politics. And, I thought that was fascinating. And so for me, I'm not trying to judge anyone. I'm trying to simply say, trying to examine the role that religion has played in this. And it certainly has played a significant role.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I think about my own personal beliefs, it would be tough. I mean, basically, I'm not going to what I would look at as go against God as a deeply held belief. So how do you even get at the same table where you're even open to compromise in a moment like that? Because there are some big issues, and abortion is probably the easiest one to bring up for that. But ultimately speaking, there's a lot of other things that you don't have a deeply held religious belief to compromise on, which I think is important in today's world, mostly because if I'm going to talk to my neighbor, it's different than how two people on Fox News or CNBC talk to each other. It's so much easier to talk to my neighbor, but we get this impression that we all hate each other all the time, which is really not the case at all. So again, one more time, I want to make sure people find your book, The Death of Compromise. What's the best place for them to go to find that?
Best place to purchase the book is on Amazon. you can Google or you can search for Death of Compromise, or you can go to deathofcompromise.com, read about the book, and there's links there to purchase it on Amazon as well.
That's great. Aaron Perlett, I'm so glad we were able to connect. I hope life in Missouri is good for you. I'm assuming, are you still in St. Louis? I forgot to ask you.
Yeah, I spend time between St. Louis and a rural town called Theodosia on the southern end of the state, on the near Arkansas. So still loving life in the Midwest. Been here 21 years, and don't foresee myself moving anywhere else.
That's great, Aaron. Thank you so much for joining us on this Memorial Day. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan. Happy Memorial Day to everybody.
It is the book, The Death of Compromise. You can go look online, Aaron Perlett. Perlut, if you want to do a quick search. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara. One more segment coming up on WORD. Well, these mornings, they go by so quick. I just want to say thank you to everyone, and I want to make sure we stay in contact. If you want to find me outside of the show, at Ryan Recker. Ryan Recker Radio is where you can follow me on Facebook. And I do try to keep up to date with things that are going on. And I know it's kind of few and far between. I haven't had a lot of fill-ins on this station, but I do Coast to Coast AM, so you hear me on that. I'll be doing Coast to Coast this weekend, so if you stay up late, you'll hear these voices. But it is Memorial Day, and I want to make sure that we give at least some honor for those that have lost their life, and probably one of the most beautiful Memorial Day songs and patriotic songs I could think of. It's one that I really enjoy, and I want to make sure that we give some time for that. And Ray Charles, it would feel a shame if we didn't really get that in today. Enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day. Hope we get to talk again soon on WORD.
Oh, beautiful. Yes, he did. Heavy brotherhood.